I had a sabbatical not long ago and the chance to read some books that have been piling up, all of which were in the category of they're a bit too long for me to get through. One of them became particularly inspiring to me, although I do think that if he'd written 100 pages rather than 300 pages, I would have read it 10 years ago, and the extra 200 pages were probably unnecessary. But it told the story of somebody who planted a church in an American context, trying to do everything they could to make sure that they were inviting to people who, like me, didn't grow up going to church, and so on. And for a period of time, the church absolutely thrived, and then things went wrong. And in the sort of, let's try to work out what we can learn from this meeting, the author went off to go and explore that, and leaving the church to be run by others. I did Google it and discovered that 20 years on, the church is going really well, and he wrote some very interesting things. His big thing was, do we need the things that we think we need? And this is the passage that I would go to that he didn't, to sum up what he was trying to say. A really challenging thing he did was to go back to the life of the early church and gave me some of the numbers that I don't have the time to go and look up. So in 100 AD, there were probably 25,000 Christians in the world. In 310 AD, which was the point at which you could start counting because the Romans stopped overtly persecuting Christians, you would think there would be, at best, a similar number, because in that time, they had to meet in secret in people's houses, they had no resources, they were persecuted mercilessly, most of their leaders were arrested and killed, they had no freedom to meet, they had no buildings, they had no central resources or anything. And yet in 310 AD, it had grown from 25,000 to about 20 million. And his point was, they had none of the things that I think and we think we need. I still think that we need the things that I think we need, and yet this passage constantly challenges me to say something slightly different. But the more useful thing he did was to go off and say other examples, and the church in China would be his example of exactly the same thing having happened in a modern-day context. So this wasn't just one of those, it's the kickstart of the early church that I've heard people speak about. These words are meant for us today, not to just say, wasn't it great that this happened 2,000 years ago. And then he did the things that many inspiring people did. He said some load of things that sound very obvious until you think, but why didn't I think of that if they were that obvious? I'm only going to tell you one of them, which was that they had a very simple and powerful understanding of who Jesus was and what difference that makes. He used the word powerful Christology. And there, it was a three-line sentence. Jesus is Lord. The difference was that Jesus as Lord was applied to every single part of their lives, and so that they were willing to do the kind of things that Jesus is asking them to do here, as if this was the normal thing, rather than the abnormal thing to do. It meant that there was a reliance on Jesus, a confidence and a view of life that was different. It meant that they'd taken seriously the things that Jesus said about when they're given authority, because while we're concentrating on not having any of the things that we think that we need, we sometimes miss out the bit that Jesus said, you can have my authority. Go out with that. They even seem to have remembered that Jesus' response to being given authority was humility and servanthood, and you can see that in what they're then expected to do. And finally, when absolutely everything that we do rely on is taken away, Jesus' Lord was the way of still believing, right to the point for many of these people for martyrdom. Simple but challenging. Okay, this isn't a rhetorical question. Do you want to put your hand up? Do you like adventures? Put your hand up if you do. Okay. Oh, that's a wise question. Depends what they are. Okay. No judgment at all. Can you put your hands up if you don't really like adventures? Well, yeah, I'm actually not so sure myself. I do have a theory that that we like the aftermath of the adventure and the build-up to it more than the adventure itself very often. And the best stories that I tell, and I'm going to be telling a few of them today, I don't have the time to put in the oh no, what have I done moments that were in the middle, because you can then see it from the end. And I think following Jesus' calling is often very much like that. Okay. So, would you like to see where I came from? Said Joseph, who comes from Roma, Slovakia. So he's a Roma gypsy, came to this country because he couldn't make a life of any kind for himself in Slovakia. When I first met Joseph, he wouldn't even admit to me that he was Roma. 3 years later, he said, would you like to come and see something of where I came from? And so me and a few people from my church, and including my then 16-year-old daughter, went. And Joseph doesn't always give you all the details. He's like, Jesus, in that respect. So I knew that in Prešov, the city that he came from, there was one hotel that Roma people were tolerated in. We had no understanding at that time of the level of in-your-face racism that came from very nice middle-class people coming out of a church towards Roma people. So there was a very strange hotel that we were tolerated in for a while. But then he hadn't mentioned that we were going to spend most of our time in another place that was about half an hour's drive away, where the only option was to stay in somebody's house. And suddenly we were doing this. We had no money that was of any use to us. We'd done the budget flight so we could spend money on giving people food when we were there, so change of clothing at best. And we were preparing my daughter for the idea that what we might be sleeping in would be something like a shed. We imagined six of us with a sleeping bag. And then we arrived at Pastor Marek's house, which is probably the most beautiful inside of a house that I think I've ever stayed in. What I didn't know was that Pastor Marek is a family of builders, and he came to Derby, made lots of money, and then went back to Slovakia. And he bought a plot of land, one plot of land for a house and one plot of land for a business. And he just finished building this beautiful house that even has two halves, one for the winter and one for the summer, because it's very hot in the winter and very cold in the summer. Sorry, the other way around, ignore me. It's very hot in the summer and very cold in the winter. And we were allowed to stay in the right half of the house for the summer. It was a beautiful thing. And I suddenly realized that sometimes when you find your person of peace, you get to live in a beautiful house, and sometimes you get to sleep with a sleeping bag in a small wooden shack. I have done both. Sorry, that's where Pavlovci is. It's a forgotten place. And the plot of land that he'd used to start a business, he then became a Christian, and God said to him, turn your business into a church. So they just filled the church, the main room in the church, with people, and when they said we were going to do a bit of church building, I didn't realize how literal that was going to be. Went back a year later and preached in that space with a translator. But this was how the people of Pavlovci, who are Roma, live. And this is what we did every night. We drove into places, and one house that had an electric socket would throw an extension lead out of a window. And this is what church looked like. And it was as close as I could imagine to what the early church was like. And the neighbours slowly peeked out of the windows, and many of them arrived. The number of people there kept on growing. And the utter poverty was shocking, because Bezlochi is a name that's not on a map. It's the Roma village that's in Pavlovci. So there's a wall. The other side of the wall, from what you're seeing, you could be in Ruddington. That was the shocking thing about it. The first year, nobody would let us come into their houses other than Pastor Marek. And when we went back again a year later, they asked if we could go and do house blessings. And I was gobsmacked by the fact that people who had absolutely nothing just wanted from me a prayer and a blessing and a few questions they had about the Bible. They asked for nothing more. That was an adventure worth going on. So the remit that Jesus sends us out with, he gives us his authority. And he says, go to the lost. He sends his disciples to the lost sheep of Israel. And he says, there's a message, the kingdom of God has come near. I felt that every time I went back to these villages over the years, before COVID stopped us being able to go, and found that the people who had become Christians, who had now made a bit of a better life for themselves, but had stayed in the area, and they were now leading house churches for the people that we were then meeting. Jesus says, freely give what you have been freely given, which is the message of salvation. But the practical stuff is just very worrying. He says, take no money in your belts. He spells out, not one penny. No bag, that's just in case you're tempted to take some things that would make life comfortable for you, I presume. Or extra shirt, or sandals, or staff. Rely completely on finding a person of peace in each town who is going to be willing to house you having never met you before, feed you and clothe you and enable you to go and do the mission. Which is what Pastor Marek did for us, having never met these strange people from England before. He just said, yeah, okay, they can come and live with us. That is difficult enough, because what happens as you're shaking the dust off your feet because you can't find a person of peace, then I presume that that night you've got nowhere to sleep. And then he spells it out even more. I am sending you out like sheep among wolves. The very first time I read that, I literally thought my Bible had got it the wrong way around. Surely with the authority of Jesus on my back, I'm like a wolf among sheep. But no, he says, I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves. So you're going to have to be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves. I've spent the last 40 years since I first read that passage trying to work out exactly what that means. If you've got any ideas, I've got a few inklings, but I find that very difficult as a line to travel. But maybe some of the debates that Jesus had in the temple courts with the Pharisees give us an understanding. And then he makes an unhelpful promise. You will be handed over to authorities, flogged and arrested. But don't worry, because when you're in court, the Holy Spirit will speak through you. That's the only thing you get in that moment. And these people, with that remit, grew from 25,000 people to 20 million in 300 years. If you read the book of Acts and you read carefully what Peter and Paul and others do, you will find them following this remit in great detail and planting every church that Paul then wrote to and became our New Testament is like that, including the point where in Corinth Paul sits with Priscilla and Aquila and does a social enterprise making tents, which is the equivalent of our plans now to teach the Roma people in Derby to do car balloting and start a Roma restaurant in order to be able to raise money to take food back to where they came from. So we've been on a long journey. In October it will be 10 years since Joseph knocked on our door after the morning service and said, would we be able to rent your church on a Sunday afternoon? He didn't tell me how many rejections he'd had before he came to us until years later. And we said, yeah, that's fine, but based on some experiences I'd had in London, I said, we're going to have to do some things together because we're going to annoy each other and leave a mess and change the settings on the PA system and all of that, and there has to be something good that overcomes those moments. And so over a long period of time, people that we started out calling our neighbours, because we take the Good Samaritan very seriously, became our friends, and then people of peace, and then people that we do ministry with. So this is the one Roma church building that the local authority didn't realise it was a Roma person building it in time to move to all the planning permission. It's in a place called Sabinov, which has one of the biggest Roma populations in the country. Sorry, this is in Slovakia. And that is Pastor Rinaldo, who is the most amazing church planter, feeder of the poor, speaks more languages than I could count, and is just an amazing man. This is Pastor Marek, who's his cousin, who leads Zoe Church that meets in our church building and that we now partner with. And this is where Pastor Marek left to come to Derby. He found, like everybody else, that as a Roma person he was unemployable in Slovakia. But he started his own business, made some money, he bought a plot of land, he built a house, he filled it with white goods and everything. And then one day, about 10 years ago, the police knocked on his door and said, we've made a new place for the Roma people to live, and we're just going to escort you to it. So they went up the hill to where that church you just saw is, and then you go down the other side of the hill, there's another wall. There's this weird place where when you're walking your dog or even taking your horse and your cow around, that's where they're meant to go to the toilet. And then the other side of that wall is this housing that he was forced to live in. And he decided, I can't do this anymore. And he brought his family to Derby. And that's how we end up with the relationship that we have there. But we go back with them. This is us doing an outside service. As you can see, it's the winter. We gave out food and clothes. But you see, these are the cousins and relatives of the people that I know in Derby. And find it very challenging. I have to say, with the other picture, I tried to take it like the children, but they literally jumped in front as I was pressing the shutter. But this is the accommodation that he was put in. With a civil rights lawyer, 2 years ago, he got £1,000 compensation from the Slovakian local authority, which didn't even cover the cost of the white goods he wasn't allowed to take with him. But it means that over that journey of 10 years, we've spent 2 years getting them to admit that they were Roma, not just Slovak. That was the day they invited us to celebrate International Roma Day with them. And 8 years after that, we do so many things together that they've become an associate congregation of Derby Urban Church, and we do ministries with them. So Roma Warm Space has become the biggest thing that we do during the week. We'll come back to that one. Derby has this great ability to get to the top of the wrong league tables. If you're into football, then you probably know that the first year that I lived in Derby, we got promoted to the Premiership, and the second year I lived there, we achieved the lowest points total ever achieved. Yesterday, Southampton drew 0-0 and exceeded that points total, so we still hold the worst Premiership football team in the history of the Premier League. A few years later, we came second in a worst Christmas tree in the city centre competition. I say we came second. The problem was that the local authority decided to do a press release with a picture of the one that won, which, of course, led to thousands and thousands of people writing in and saying, no, we think our one is worse than that. So I reckon that we won that one. Okay. When I first moved to Derby, had one of the highest levels of homelessness and drug addiction per the population. Because we're a smaller city than others, you don't see those in the numbers, but per population, that's where we've stayed. And 10 years ago, we made the largest cut to services for the homeless of any city council in the country. The area where I live, so one of our churches is at the top of this area and the other church venue is halfway down it. But this South Derbyshire area has got poorer and poorer. And some of the families that you're seeing on the screen are the poorest families in the whole of the East Midlands, because we finally reached the top of the child poverty league table in the East Midlands. And we're heading for the top of the national one. Things that you don't want to be able to say about your community. And having lived in places which had a worse reputation and were poorer, my frustration is that I've seen 18 years of decline, whereas in the other two places where I've ministered, I've seen things actually get better for people. We have more people sleeping on our church fronts than ever before, almost every night, which used to be something that happened maybe every few months. And the last one of the Roma Warm Spaces, we had 137 people came and ate in our church hall who would have gone hungry otherwise. Local families. We feed homeless people on single homeless people on a Thursday, and those numbers now look small in comparison with this. And sometimes I feel moments of despair about this. The irony is that having gone back to the place where they came from, these people think that they are living like kings, even though they're the poorest people in the country. The long journey that we've had with them, which I realise now has been 10 years, has led to the point where I didn't understand that we're regarded as being the experts on Roma people in the city. That's very worrying, because we're definitely not experts. It's also worrying because we're not in any rooms being able to tell people our expertise, but I have been told that the thing that's has been said is the only way you can get Roma people to come to anything is you have to partner with Derby Urban Church. And lots of local authority initiatives have tried to get Roma people to come to things, and they are terrified of authorities because of what happened to them in Slovakia. And in 10 years, nobody has sat down and asked them, why won't you come to the doctor's surgery? Why won't you come to this? Why won't you come to that? So it's a nice badge of honour to hold. I told a few people at church about this, and they looked at me completely bemused. I said, what on earth are you talking about? Because they don't see another community. They just see friends that they have food with on a Wednesday night who happen to speak a different language and do a different style of music that we quite like and we're trying to learn a bit of. I was delighted to see that people at Derby Urban Church saw the turning up and just making a home with people, finding friends who became partners, and then doing ministry together. Because that is the truth of what we've done for 10 years. And apparently, the getting to know some Roma people and then allowing them to run their own thing, but being the person who applies for the funding, is the most out-of-the-box thing that anybody could think of doing. And yet I thought that it was the most obvious thing ever. So wonderfully, Pastor Marek's daughter, Anna, is now employed to do work with Roma people because she knows the language, because they're related to her in most cases. And oddly, lots of people are now coming to the parent and toddler group that we do with them, which we've been wanting to do for, I think, almost as many years as you've hoped to have a Hope of Action House, into Action House, if that's of any use. Okay, a dream that's finally fulfilled and is now thriving. This is Sean, who wandered into our Thursday afternoon congregation for homeless people. It's just before the biggest homeless meal that we do each week, about 3 months ago. Sean had a beard that demonstrated that he had nowhere to wash. He was sleeping rough. He started sleeping rough outside our church because he realised he was safer there. Quietly spoken, dishevelled, didn't think anybody would welcome him in. He will admit he came to Friends United and Jesus because there's homemade cake and coffee and it's quite quiet and reflective, and he just listened. We started praying for him about finding a place to stay. We showed him where he needed to go to the council, but we kept on saying, Green Pastures Homeless Hostel would be a good place for you, Sean. Does something similar to Hope into Action, but different. That's a longer story. But it's around the corner from Aussie Road venue, and I go and speak at their weekly church service and so on. I was really glad to hear that Sean got a place. He got it on a Thursday, which meant he was able to tell us on a Thursday. We were able to say, yay, that's great, and he moved in the next day. And then the next 2 weeks, he wasn't around, and I have to admit, I was a bit disappointed. Okay. The following week, I said, let's pray for Sean, because it would be great that having got this far, he would continue with church. And Pauline, who is the biggest welcomer of people to Friends United in Jesus and also remembers everybody's name and keeps me on track, said, what are you talking about? He's sitting over there. And so I looked at Sean and I realised that the transformation in 2 weeks was so big that I literally hadn't recognised that this was him because we hadn't spoken yet. Turns out that before getting into lots of trouble and heroin addiction, Sean was a window cleaner. And so he's now helping us with finalising a way of helping people to do window cleaning, which is what he's doing there. But the life transformation in a month is astonishing. But it started with somebody saying, would you like to come in and have a quiet space? And there's homemade cake available. I'm looking at my time and saying, I got long. I wanted to finally tell you about Pastor Isaac, who is there with me. Weirdly, I met him in India with my friend Pastor Raj. It's too long a story to tell, but during my sabbatical, I was able to go and visit Shalom People's Church, which is that journey. Okay. So it's on the outskirts of the capital city, Accra. It's beyond the point where the water supply is. So you have to buy big tanks of water that you then decant into a biodegradable version of our the water bottles we buy from the supermarket. And there's about to be a change to the law in Ghana, which is that up to now there's been a government cap on the local companies that are allowed to sell it to you. The government have decided that if you have competition, that will drive the price down. The problem is there's only one company willing to supply this forgotten community, and so the price is about to go up just for being able to get drinking water and to be able to flush the toilet. Pastor Isaacs was sent there by a church in the city centre, which is huge and thriving, and which we passed on the way out of the airport, and we went to their Sunday service eventually. But because he was seen as a church planter, or they would use the word apostle, it was go and just arrive in a place and do what you can for the community. His wife was an experienced head teacher, so they started a school as well as a church. And every person of need in the area is just taken to Shalom People's Church because Pastor Isaac will know what to do. And they really are the A&D of the area. The reason that I was gobsmacked was that I cannot understand how they do this. They get no government funding, or what they've been offered they turn down because they would have to take out the Christian credentials that are part of what they do. He's adopted 30 people. Some of whom are now the tradie pastors he's about to send out and do the same. About 10% of the children live on site and are orphans, and they feed them, clothe them, look after them in absolutely every way. And I don't know how they do it. And it sounded like Matthew chapter 10. He talks about the authority that he's been given by Jesus Christ, that every door will be opened, and that all he wants to do is love and serve people. So, and their worship is joyful and amazing. Made an English man who can't dance look as stupid as I do in a Roma village in Slovakia. Okay. This was Pastor Isaac's own tribe, because what they do is they have worship that's led by the different tribes with different styles and so on. Pastor Raj works for the local authority as he does the street cleaning, and during the winter he's allowed to go and do the salt spreading. So while I was complaining that the weather was too cold for the homeless people being on my doorstep, Pastor Raj was thinking, I can earn lots and lots of money doing this. Every penny he's put into a borehole, which we got these pictures last week. They now have their own fresh water supply that will clean up the school and the church. And when they put a few pipes in, they could even sell water to their neighbours at half the price that the company is now changing them, and bless them in that way. Both of these men just take this so much more seriously than I do, and it's unbelievably challenging. And what they continue to do by just saying, well, I will go and do what God has asked me to do, and somehow the things will arrive, the resources will be there, is absolutely amazing and really challenging. But it's the point at which having the authority of Jesus and the message the kingdom of God is near becomes louder than you're not allowed to take with you money or coat or anything else, and you have to rely on people when you get there. I would love to tell you that that's what I'm doing every day in my life, and I can't say that. I can only say that I'm deeply challenged by this. And the small amount of ministry that we are able to join in with that sounds like this, you have helped us with that, and we're truly grateful. God bless you. Thank you.